Welcome to the REI Diamonds Show with Dan Breslin, your source for real estate investment jewels of wisdom.
And welcome to the REI Diamond Show, episode 97 with Aaron Lockhart on doing deals with diamond equity. I'm Dan Breslin, host of the REI Diamond Show, and today's discussion is going to be less of an interview and more of a discussion and introduction with my friend and business partner and vice president of Chicago for Diamond Equity Investments, Aaron Lockhart. Any long-term fans of the show probably remember our episode that we did over a year and a half ago, which we will link to in the show notes here. But I had a couple purposes here in doing this episode. The first reason I wanted to get Aaron Lockhart on the show, and I will be doing this with a few of the other key members of our team around the country, is to give an introduction to some of the team members to my podcast audience at their request. Many of our podcast audience members have been reaching out and investing in our deals as private lenders, and I'd like to take this time, this opportunity, to kind of maybe answer a few questions ahead of time, maybe, you know, give it just a background of who it is that's on the team that you are investing in. And then my second reason for this episode is to kind of give people an overview, a little bit of the structure, a little bit of the thought process behind diamond equity investments. And here in the Chicago region, just to give everybody a background, we currently have somewhere around 30, 33 deals. Aaron, do you happen to know the exact amount?
That's exactly right, 33.
33 deals on the board right now. That's in some various state of being rehabbed, pending settlement on a purchase side. Maybe they are for sale as wholesale projects. Maybe they are pending settlement because they are deals that were already sold to buyers, retail buyers, cash buyers, whatever the case may be. So I just want to kind of, like I said, take this time to give people an inside look, a behind-the-scenes look at how we operate here. Right now, as we record this on March 26, 2018, Chicago and Atlanta are the highest volume and highest producing markets that we have at Diamond Equity, with Philadelphia, Miami, and Tampa kind of fighting for the next positions continuously. So we're really kicking ass here in Chicago, and we're doing some good things, and we've got some luck, great team, great person in charge with you there, Aaron. So why don't we take this time? Welcome to the show. And how are you doing today, Aaron?
I'm doing great, Dan, and I appreciate the words and appreciate that introduction. And you're right, you know, definitely we've been very aggressive at our growth and our trajectory here in Chicago over the last year. It's been a great ride. It's been very fun. And more importantly, we're nowhere close to being done. You know, we're getting better and better every week. And I think a lot of that has to do with that we're examining every process. We have these calls, these discussions with our team across the country, as well as here in the market, to make sure that we're staying on top of everything and improving our processes as we grow.
And I think that's key for people to understand. You know, I think, you know, I don't know what it looks like to look from the outside and see 33 deals on the board. And, you know, maybe we're sending out wholesale deals multiple times a week. Just a glance at the deal board is sometimes overwhelming for me. And I'm kind of like guiding this thing and making the deals happen along with you and the rest of the team. But I ask myself what it is. I ask this a lot. What it is that we are doing as a team here that other people are not doing, or that maybe I wasn't doing 8, 9, 10 years ago when I first got in the business, when I used to struggle for deals. And I'm sure there's people, you know, listening to the show right now who have been in that. And I'm sure you even remember that, Aaron, where, you know, it felt like you won the lottery. When you finally got a deal, you finally got one that you negotiated, you closed, and each deal subsequent to that felt like winning the lottery. There was like all this luck, and it almost seemed like a miracle, and the hand, the finger of God came down and pushed the pen to, you know, sign that contract and close the deal. And in some cases, I mean, they definitely are a blessing when they take place. But then you talk about us examining the process, and we all work hard here at Diamond Equity to figure out you know, every last detail as to what makes our marketing a little better, what makes our presentation of the offers a little bit better, what makes our lenders want to invest money in us, what makes our contractors give us a little bit better of a price than maybe some of the other prices out there. Basically, what are all the details that makes our machine tick and run, and our relentless right. focus on that process and making it better is one of the answers I always come up with. And that kind of, quite frankly, helps me stay focused because this is hard work. What's our team look like right now? Do you want to talk about kind of the structure of things and who's doing what here in Chicago with us and your role?
Absolutely. Absolutely. So first, I have three guys that are in the field with me, and their main focus is taking the leads that come in from all of our different channels and turning them into a resolution for the seller, which at the same time turns it into a deal for us. So we monetize these leads a lot of different ways, but to tell you about the team, I have Alvaro Villalobos, who has been with us since May of 2016, started kind of slow. Actually, he started part-time. He was working a full-time job. And in May, it took him about a year to really get his feet underneath him, figure out the business. But now he's definitely 2 feet in. He left his full-time job in May of last year. Has been full-time ever since. And it's definitely, if not the number one guy, the number two guy consistently on a month-in, month-out basis. On top of that, we have Michael Peters, who joined with us December of 2016. You know, right around that beginning time. And he hit the ground running. I mean, the guy came in with a sales background, direct mail marketing background, had ran his own business before, had some passion about real estate and some basic foundation knowledge. So I really took him under my wing. He grabbed everything very quickly. A fantastic story about him is that his first deal out the gate, he made a $15,000 assignment fee, right? I mean, like, I still have the picture to this day saved in my desktop photo of certain memories of the photo he sent me when he looked at his check. And it's one for the ages. But definitely, it's been fun developing him. And the beautiful thing about Alvaro and Mike is that they're passionate about being great at this, right? So reading books, following our instructions, being coachable, being consistent, working 6-7 days a week, whatever the task called for, these guys have stepped up and definitely made it easy for me to commit to them and vice versa. So they've definitely grown, and you've invested in them as well, Dan, from time and money and resources and knowledge and wisdom, and it's paid off. It's definitely paid off. A new guy on the team, Joshua Walls, started off in the office, you know, saw all the deals and everything that was happening, couldn't sit still, jumped into the field, took him a little while to get his feet underneath him like it does everybody. And the beautiful thing about it is that every person that came on the team from Alvaro, because he was kind of like our real learning station, their learning curve has gotten shorter and shorter and shorter because we feed them all of our mistakes as well as all the things that we're well at so they can learn from them. And, of course, we're with them every step of the way. So Alvaro learned from me. Then Mike learned from Alvaro and me and you. And then Josh learned from Mike, Alvaro, me. You know, so the learning curve has just been very short for Josh, and he's already picked up steam and started to make money. And so that's what we have in the field, a great group of guys that can go anywhere, carry themselves with strong character and integrity, believe in our vision, believe in what we're doing, and believe in representing us the right way. And it took us a while. I mean, that's the three that was left over. But Dan will tell you that we've definitely gone through some guys on the team to find the right mix. It's kind of like the San Antonio Spurs. We would draft the right quality and integrity before we draft talent and skill and resume. So that's how strong I feel about those guys that we have with us. So that's the sales team. And then behind the scenes, we also have a very strong team as well. I have a marketing manager, Melanie Lockhart, who is a whiz with websites, email, social media. She handles all the marketing for us on our side of things. I have an executive assistant who also has an assistant with her. They handle all the admin side of things. They help me with transactional coordination, making sure the paperwork is done with our lawyers and realtors. They handle all of our property assessment and data research, looking up public records, and stay on top of our guys. You know, they come behind us in everything from the whiteboard, checking on buyers' interest, to the deals app and notes, to the contracts app. So if we're dropping the ball on our side, they're letting us know about it on a weekly basis. So it's definitely a big team effort here. And we're constantly even adding some new people. We got Andrew back recently, who's now working the phones for us. And, you know, we all know that he's a seasoned pro. I mean, he started off with us in the beginning, and now to have him back in the mix is another layer of wisdom and understanding for our guys to learn from, as well as another guy who we can trust on the team is going to carry the flag, carry the mantle of what we set up. And, you know, he appreciates it. That's the beautiful thing, because he knows where we come from. So he's even more willing now to work hard and add to what we're doing.
We, as you describe a lot of this stuff here, it's been such a blessing and such a great thing. And I'm just reminded of somewhere along the way, I remember I moved out here to Chicago in 2015, I believe. And I remember you and I got started before that point in time, together, where I started doing some marketing in Chicago. I knew I was going to move out here. I was moving from Philadelphia to Chicago so that I could be a dad for my daughter. She was, she was 13 at the time, 14, maybe she was just turning 14 at the time. She's 16 now. So it's just a few years. And that's why I entered the Chicago market in the first place. It was never a world domination, want to be flipping houses in every city in the country that I ever went to or anything like that at all. It wasn't because the Chicago market was this great hotbed of opportunity, but because it was the place that I was going to live, and I was doing the same thing in Philadelphia. One thing led to another. Chicago taught me how to open a market. You know, I opened the Atlanta market a year later with the knowledge that I had gained in learning a new market, and Tampa and Miami subsequently followed those markets. But you and I talked, we found each other, and we started kind of doing business together early on there. And there were a lot of ups and downs and a lot of challenges. It took us at least a year to figure out, I would say, took a year to figure out how to get past the lottery winning mentality. Do you remember what it was like in the beginning? And then we started to make some incremental improvements, and we started to get some deal flow, but there was still that up and down roller coaster ride that I'm sure a lot of people in real estate can relate to. And then we kind of had a point where we gained momentum and then went over the hill. Can you talk a little bit about, like, the, you know, the darkness before our when we got some momentum here in Chicago?
Well, you know, looking back at it, Dan, you know, everything's hindsight 2020, right? But looking back at it, honestly, man, I mean, if I could say the number one thing we struggled at in the first year of working together is we were really still learning how to put together a good deal. You know, it's different here in Chicago, it's different in every market. But, you know, if we look at about how we were analyzing our comps, how we were putting together our rehab estimates, how we were determining our ARV, and that all led to the entry price that we were going into with the seller. Once we figured that out, and then we realized how way off we were on our numbers, then remember, we had to reset and go back and rebuild our presentation on the phone, our presentation in the living room, our negotiation strategy. We had to redo all that once we learned that we had to be in at a whole different price. So learning that, I think, was a very big catalyst. And we honestly figured that out between two markets kind of like at the same time. Like, I can't even say that we found the gold nugget of wisdom here. It was kind of like of sharing best practices and what was working wasn't work. And what was working and what wasn't working in Philadelphia at the same time, that we kind of ironed all that out. So yeah, man, definitely some ups and downs, you know, learning how to even create relationships, lasting relationships and good relationships with buyers, negotiating with them, bringing them a good deal that made sense for both sides, even at the same time. You know, all that was definitely a learning curve, but we figured it out, man. I mean, we were willing to lose. And I mean, hey, you know, honestly, our palate has changed. I mean, yeah, at the beginning, we were thinking everything was a good deal, and it didn't matter if it was in Inglewood or if it was in Beverly, we were going to move it, right? You know, we had to take our lumps and figure out, you know, where the right markets were, the right zip codes to market to. And even we were in the hood, what was a real deal in the hood, you know, and how to even look up the debt and look at what was really going on with the property, finding out sellers was telling us one thing and it was the reality was another. So learning how to research the deal before we even go out to the appointment, all those things we've had to figure out from ups and downs and makes us what we are today.
And you brought up a good point there too, Aaron. And that's how to put together a good deal. And when I wrote down on my notes, I put good deal all in capital letters. Like, you need a real deal here in order to actually make any money in the business. As a fix and flipper, I mean, I guess in some other alternate universe, if you were buying rental properties in the right neighborhood and you knew where the hotness was increasing values over the course of time, it wouldn't matter if you did overpay for that property, like I talk about in my gentrification strategy. But for the most part, we here at Diamond Equity, and I'm assuming most of the people who listen to the show, lenders included, we're looking for cash. We're not looking for buy a property and hang on for appreciation. We're not trying to buy, you know, Amazon and then wait 10 years for that thing to justify its value to us and cash out. We're looking for like 3 to 6 months. We want to check at the end with our money back, like whether we're flipping a property, whether we're wholesaling a property, whether we're investing in a deal. And in order to do that, you have to have deal flow. You have to have a good deal. And a humongous revelation for myself in the last 6 months. So I'm 12 years in the business. People have been listening to the show. Everybody knows I do a lot of deals. I was surprised to figure out, like, a good deal is not necessarily the same thing in Miami that it is in Atlanta, that it is in Chicago, that it is in Philadelphia. And what I mean by that is there's certain areas and certain neighborhoods where, you know, condo deals don't make sense, where attached houses in the Chicago market may not make sense. They may make sense in another neighborhood, but there seems to be a little bit of a, you know, there's characteristics of a deal in each city. There's an opportunity zone. It could be by zip code. It could be by structure, but they're not going to be consistent, clean across the board. I hear about people talk on their other podcast shows about like Texas, and they're looking for something, excuse me, built in 1980 or greater. It has to be a 3-bed, 2-bath. Like, no one wants the 2 beds, and have this like particular criteria for that market where, you know, as well as I do, Aaron, if we tried to buy only properties built after 1980 in Chicago, we would find one deal per year if we were lucky, maybe two.
Right. Right.
So, you know, if you're in your own market and you're listening to the show and you haven't figured out the deals yet, or maybe you've done a couple of deals, but you're sort of still trying to define and systematize things, it just amazes me that the systematized deal, you know, the criteria for the deal of what I'm looking for and what I believe is hot has definitely evolved. And when we start to realize what that criteria looks like in the Chicago market or the Atlanta market, we start to do a higher volume of deals. We start to see a lot more deal flow come across our desk. In Chicago, you know, the South Side city of Chicago, with the exception of some of our hotter areas like Bridgeport and Pilsen and down around Midway Airport, we're seeing more appreciation now in the last 12 to 18 months, specifically in the last 6 months in some of these neighborhoods. Deals are now being made on properties in there. You know, some of the flippers who bought on the numbers 6 months ago were able to set enormous records. They bought the property thinking they were going to sell it for $150,000, $160,000. That's all the comps justified. Those deals were very hard to wholesale to them. They were, I'm sure, hard for them to pull the trigger on and then invest the type of capital that they did in the construction in some of them. Those deals were not acceptable deals for you and me to buy, these deals that I'm talking about in the comps. At this point, Aaron, there's no way we would have done those deals at those numbers. But now, 6 months later, the market's heated up. The inventory is lower. The economy is better. The other neighborhoods where these rehab houses were being bought have been priced out, and there's no more inventory there. So people are buying in these other neighborhoods, and the originally $150,000 comp ends up selling for $189,000 a few months later. So you see an upswing of $20,000-$30,000 or more in a property that's under $200,000. You're talking about like a 10-15% premium that people have gotten lucky with over the course of time. And like the other thing is that reward mechanism that I just described, when you look at the market as a whole, this is why you're seeing a lot of quote-unquote dumb money coming into the market, paying high prices for stuff on the MLS and paying higher prices to these wholesalers. And some of us veterans are looking at these deals coming through our emails and saying, man, what idiot, who the hell is buying these things? What's going on in the market? There's just so much dumb market. It's got to be a bubble. But on the flip side, you have these investors who bought property, spent too much rehabbing the property, and then the market rewarded them with a 10 or a 12 or 15% higher premium for the renovated property. So they're setting records on the way out, and they're all basically trying to buy that, that lottery ticket, for lack of a more efficient analogy here. They're buying that lottery ticket of the next fix and flip. If it's in the right area and it's going to go up by just a dramatic amount of difference on the way out, which happens in, if you're in the right areas, it's happening repeatedly. It's almost a system that people can follow. The South Phillies of the world, the Beltline in the Atlanta, the Pilsons, the areas, on the south side, down around the, even the west side, we're starting to see the Oak Park and Maywood here in the Chicago market start to see these record-setting prices that are it's just the market. The market is going up at this point, and it's happening in the $200,000 to $300,000 price point. It may be happening at the higher price points, but that just happens to be where we see most of our inventory and our deal flow. So I just share all that long-winded tangent to, here it is. This is my revelation, is that, what's a deal is almost like a continuously moving target. And my perspective on the five different markets that I pull comps and analyze deals in continuously day and night, it allows me, when I have the energy, to really dig into some of these markets and just make some different observations that I hadn't noticed before. And I know that we've made a lot of money as a result of that.
Yeah, you mentioned about the cookie cutter approach, or the, having, just kind of like the rinse repeat, and people try to find these formulas, man. And I think one of the things that makes us successful is that we never had a targeted neighborhood, Dan. We went wherever the deals were, and it forced us to really understand the market. It forced us to be able to explore deals from different angles and learn different demographics and learn different landmarks and things that pull a property up or pull a property down in its value. And I think that's very educational, man. I mean, you have to take a shotgun approach. You have to really learn what's out there so you can understand what is an opportunity and what isn't. And you're going to make some mistakes, and those are the mistakes that you can learn from. And you don't hit the home run now and turn into a base hit today, but it adds up to 4, 5, 6, 7 home runs in the future because of what you learned on that base hit.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely it does. Aaron, I am going to switch gears here just a little bit and go circle back to the people on the team. One of the things that has been so rewarding for me on this podcast, and I'm sure you know it, I'm sure the listeners have already heard it a few times, but a lot of my team has come directly through the podcast. I can't remember if Alvaro was one that came directly through the podcast or not here in Chicago. Mm-hmm. But he did come through the doors of our Real Estate Investor Networking event. We used to hold that monthly here in Chicago. We've scaled it back. We're going to do 2 or 3 of those real estate networking parties a year going forward for people who are wanting to come check out the event. It's not a sales pitch. We never really monetized it or turned it into a business. So it became a lot, a lot of time investment. And but it does keep the door open for people like Alvaro to walk in. And I, like I said, have met several people that are now on the team through the podcast, like Atlanta, Austin Stack in Atlanta came directly through the podcast and walked into the real estate networking event, the ring meeting that we had in Chicago here that I was referencing, that Alvaro also walked in through. And one of the things that I do on purpose is this podcast, and I know you do a lot of work with investors, one-on-one talking with people, but that's to attract the right people to the team. And when we find a superstar, not even necessarily a superstar on the front end, when we find somebody with that persistence and the determination and the willingness to add value and not look for, an hourly wage when they come to the table, but they're willing to understand that the rewards are greater for becoming a deal maker, someone who can go out there and put deals together. And they only have to see a small glimmer of hope when it comes to that, and then be willing to do the work. I mean, our work ethic, my work ethic, your work ethic, Alvaro, Mike, Joshua's work ethic is if there's a text message sent at 10 o'clock at night, no matter the day of the week, there's a really good chance, I'd say 80% chance, that the text message is going to get answered that night and not the next morning. Saturday, Sunday afternoon, there's tasks constantly being done by any various member of the team here in Chicago. So where we see a lot of people with that real estate lifestyle, want to sit on the beach and buy into that dream of living your life on an island and sipping margaritas or whatever, that's not reality, and that's not the work ethic that has made us successful. And if you are listening to this and you have the work ethic that people around you are saying, man, can you take a break? Can you cut it back? Like, what's your deal? Like, why are you so stressed out? Why are you driving so hard to get this thing done? Well, like, I'm here to tell you, and I'm sure you'll agree, Aaron, that that's the reality of what it took to build the momentum up to where we're doing 33 deals at any given time, give or take 10 or 20 more deals in the pipeline. But I preface all of that to ask you, what is it that has made you successful, turned a corner over the last couple years, and like, why is that?
That's a great question. I want to preface that with saying two things real quickly. When just about the point that you were just making, you know, with you think about the people that we run across and who we're trying to attract. I tell you, Dan, I have had many people call me, invite me to lunch, invite me to this meeting, that meeting, wanting to learn what we do. And I've had many lunches with them. And I tell you, man, when I most ask how I got started, and when they hear the amount of effort and work that it took for me to get to where I'm at and that I consistently put into this point, I rarely ever hear from them again, right? But the ones that I do hear from again, like the Alvaros or the Mikes or Josh, says, okay, now I'm going to give them some materials, right? Some REI Diamond podcast to listen to, maybe a book I want them to read, you know, that we'll talk about towards the end here. And then show me that you're willing to put in some work, right? Give me a couple calls, you know, asking what's going on with deals and things like that. And then when they start to show up there, that's when I even start to even put in the time where they get behind the veil and I really give them a good conversation and let them know what the opportunity is. I mean, because a lot of times, man, all I have to do is talk about what is required and people shut down. So with that said, what has made me successful? The two first things I would say is, number one, faith and belief in God. And the traits that come along with that, right? So strength to deal with adversity, peace and patience, wisdom or an understanding or at least the search of it in all things, character and integrity. Anybody that knows me knows I take those two things very, very seriously. Service to others. You know, even when it comes down to dealing with the seller, you know, I go in as a problem solver. I go in. A lot of these people are distressed, taxes, mortgage, you know, home falling apart, divorce, foreclosure, whatever the case is. They're stressed out, indecisive, don't know what's if they're on foot or horseback. I come in giving them opportunity, you know, information and options. So definitely serving them with good information and good opportunity, you know, and good options for them. Showing love to my neighbor, man. I meet a lot of people, man, that need help out there. And I think that's part of why I grow, because I serve, I help, I give, and hope when things go opposite of what the goal and plan is. Definitely those things have made me successful. And I learned those things early in life. You know, I've been going to church for a long time, and I've learned them. And through trials and tribulations, whatever you want to call them, challenges, I've learned how to apply them to every aspect of my life, especially in business. Determination and perseverance is part of those things I was just talking about. You know, you have to have them. You have to learn how to take the hits and keep moving forward. Having clear goals is a very big part of what has made me successful. You know, of course, yes, I'm married. I have three kids. But, you know, my goals are centered around others, right? I retired my mom last year. You know, I'm helping her out now. So, you know, she was able to retire before she turned 70. She was planning on working until she was 80. But thanks to the growth of this business, that's something that's been able to happen. My wife was able to come home and get off the job and work with me in the business. You know, my house is updated. My kids are well taken care of. You know, the needs of the church are met. My community is starting to hear my name and buzz because of the things that I'm out here doing for the kids and the youth. out of my own pocket for free, whether it's teaching them about credit and finances, whether it's getting them off the streets and teaching them how to play basketball, whether it's giving them free lessons on how to play the piano. These are just things that I'm doing to give. And I think those were all part of my goals. I never would have had the time to do these things working a 9-to-5. I never would have had the money to do it working the 9-to-5. It was the goals that I had and what I could do with real estate. I don't care about sipping margaritas on a beach. Can I impact people's lives? Can I create powerful or meaningful relationships? Surrounding myself with people, with the right people, and being very protective of that is by far one of the most critical things of my success. And I would put you at the top of that list, Dan, and I'm not saying that because you have me on the podcast. You know, you and I both know where I was back in September 2014 when you met me, you know, fresh off of breaking off a partnership, figuring out how I was going to restructure my business, struggling to figure out how I was going to do a deal a month, you know, and anything that I was doing, just trying to get some money in my pocket, right? I had to borrow money to do a $7,000 transaction to put in monetary terms. And learning how I had to surround people that were way ahead of what I was trying to do, that were like-minded individuals, that weren't trying to cut corners, where that wasn't trying to do nothing slick or shady. You know, we were just trying to do business the right way and to take massive action and to do it on a big scale. And so I've been very protective about that and very selective about those types of people, from my team down to my mentors, down to my circle of friends. And a lot of people are no longer in my life because of those decisions. And I think that's a direct result of the success that I'm having today. Last but not least, I would say just consistency and accountability, man. I show up every day. No excuses, injured, sick, tragedies, whatever it is. I take ownership. I control what I can control. I hold myself accountable first and others second. You know, I'm willing to grow. I'm willing to stretch. I'm willing to delegate responsibilities. I don't have limits or fears. And, I, that's just me showing up. You know, outside of that, leveraging other people would be the only other thing I would say. That has been a direct effect of my success, you know, learning how to say I can't do everything and to not even checking emails, putting that into somebody else's hands, you know, just making sure that every facet is covered, understanding that I can't be the bottleneck, but I can be the brain behind everything, but moving it to people that can get the job done and leaving them the responsibility. That's been a big part of it too. So that's the shortest. That's the Reader's Digest version.
All right.
It's hard to say what makes – you can't sum it up in just two or three things that makes a person successful. You know, most, you know, people have the top 10 at least, and it's probably 100. But those would be the things that I would say off the top of my head come to mind.
Yeah, it's a completely loaded question. You did a great, fantastic job giving us the answer there. I really like – you know, you mentioned a couple things that I know about you there that, you know, you brought up being in church, and I know you do piano lessons and you're teaching people, you know, the basketball coaching and all that. And I observe something, you know, with bringing, let's say, Alvaro on the team, your level of commitment and patience in growing someone who started off, you know, in a restaurant industry with no sales experience, no negotiation experience, only the hunger and the drive to want to make it happen. And you worked with him and worked with him and worked with him. And you know, it's almost like your patience in doing those things and managing people in the past really set you up for being able to do that on such a complex topic, skill set, competency that we have here. And that's just putting deals together, you know, whether that's going to be the wholesale deal or it's a fix and flip a deal. I don't think most people put the same level of attention and recognize the complexity necessary to really win at that kind of thing on a consistent basis like you have done. And then you've implemented the guidance with these people. And it brings something up. I wrote down here while you were talking. We talked about 2014 and not having the $7,000 to do those deals. And when I first got in the business myself, I was on the bus. In 2006, I was taking taxi cabs to meet private lenders out there to deal. It was like almost embarrassing. I'd have them drop me off around the corner and run around the corner and meet the lender who's like waiting at the property I'm trying to flip. And eventually that guy did fund deals for me. But what I wrote down was, if you can't make money without money, you won't make money with money either. And I say that, one of my mentors actually told me that a week, 2 weeks ago. I said, oh yeah, that's solid. I remember him saying that years ago in 2013, when I first found that mentor. He's not even a real estate guy, just a business mentor in general. And we did that for a number of years, where we just wholesaled property. We just did mortgage takeover deals. We just took, finally, we started having the cash and we're closing out those deals ourselves. And, you know, early on through some of those struggles, you know, there's times, sometimes in partnerships when you definitely got to get out like you did with the other partnership there. And then there's times where it's challenging and you can't get out. And another one of my spiritual mentors taught me this, and that's, you know, God is going to attach you to people if you believe in God. And sometimes the going is going to get rough and the grass is going to look greener on the other side. I'm sure there's people listening who probably can think of their wife or their husband that they're attached to, and maybe they were thinking of at some point jumping out of that attachment that God had set them. This was arranged since before time, and you're attached with this person, and you know the clouds come and you're thinking of running, but maybe you stay consistent and maybe you remain, you know, committed, business partnership or people working on the team who are running the deals, or the husband or the wife situation. And, you know, lo and behold, a few years goes by, you work through the rough patch, and, you know, here we are, certainly you and I, Aaron. I'm sure we had our little rough spots, which we did, where there were no deals coming in, and it looked like maybe this thing wasn't going to work, but now there's 33 deals on the board, and we figured out the Chicago market, and it feels really good. And I take both of those, you know, things I wrote down there, and I ask myself this. So when we met, Aaron, in 2014, and we started doing deals in 2015, you know, my goal and the things that I thought about was like, how can I make money doing real estate deals? How can I make money doing real estate deals? And then it progressed throughout the course of that year and the year following, and working on just my own thought process, spending a lot of time studying people who are more successful than myself, like John Rockefeller, as an example. And I changed my question, my driving question changed to now, which some people know, my main philosophy is, once God has attached these people to me and introduced them into my life and I'm working with them now, how can I create bigger opportunities for those people? And so that's what I'm being driven by, is trying to find ways for everybody on my team throughout the country to have bigger opportunities for themselves to increase and grow in their life. How can I create opportunities for, like, listen, Aaron, we got the cash, and most of the deals that we fund using private lenders, we can just close them out. We could go get a quick, hard money loan. We could use a line of credit, but we open up the opportunity and we pay a pretty decent interest rate to people and allow them to participate on our deals to help build the relationship, because these are people who have come forward, sometimes without me even mentioning or saying anything. They've reached out and said, hey, I want to be a part of this, and it forced me to step back and say, okay, well then, let me figure out a way for you to participate in our opportunity. I don't necessarily need it right now. Maybe there's a time that comes when we're doing this and it becomes, you know, more and more important for us to raise larger amounts of capital that we just don't have sitting in the bank to take these deals down. But that was one of the answers that came to the question of, how can I create bigger opportunities for these people who have come into my life? And that's just continuously on the back of my mind. Sometimes I can't sleep at night because I'm trying to figure out a better answer and a better answer and a better answer for that question.
Dan, I'll tell you, man, now you're talking my language right now, man. I have to honestly say that my driving force by far is trying to make others around me more successful. Because I think, just like you already know, the more successful that they are, that if I take care of everybody else's goals, my goals are going to be met, right? So even when I came into this year, my number one goal was to make everybody on my team, from the sales down to the admin team, give me their goals for the year. And I'm making them define it. I'm making us plan it out, how they're going to accomplish it. I want personal. I want business. I want finances thrown in there. because I know I came into the year with a certain goal, and by heading and helping everybody else hit their goals around me, that's definitely going to help me achieve mine, if not surpass it. And it, that definitely, you know, it makes me better. It keeps me humble. It keeps me hungry, driven. It keeps me up at night. It wakes me up early, sharp, focused, ready to go. I'm not one of those type of people that rolls out of bed and needs 10 minutes to get going. I'm ready to get down. I could take a phone call right away. Like, I'm ready to go because I'm inspired. I'm motivated. I'm feeding off of their energy, and they're feeding off of me. And it's pervasive, man. I mean, like, down to my own family. You know, I have a daughter who struggles with some physical things and asthma. And there may be a doctor, not here in the United States, but in Germany, that's going to help my daughter. And dang it, Dad is going to have a plane ticket ready to go if that's the doctor that she needs to see to get her where she needs to be health-wise. I'm not convinced on all this United States medicine. That's another topic. I got a son that wants to play professional basketball. Well, guess what? It's expensive to get a child into a professional sport. You know, he has to be in certain camps. He has to have trainers. He has to play in certain leagues. He's got to be in exposure tournaments. I'm spending money that I've never had in investing in my children to make sure that they can achieve their goals. All that is part of the fire, man. All of it. All of it makes me who I am right now.
Yeah, you're right about that. I got to apologize. I don't know if the static is coming through. The waves are particularly big outside the condo here in Chicago again today. So it could be like a periodic little static. It's not going to get better. I signed the contract the other day on a new condo, not new construction, but a bigger condo with like six sliding glass doors. And right from my office, I got the view of downtown Chicago across the lake. In one direction down south, and then going east, the views are all out over the water. So I'm excited to go there, but sad to say that the noise will probably be equal, maybe a little quieter since I'll be on a higher floor. But yeah, my apologies for the noise.
No worries. I didn't mean to get off on the tangent there. You struck a chord.
Yeah, my fault. One thing I want to mention too is, We're gonna give away two big nuggets here today. For anyone who's like interested in doing deals off market, I just want to mention a pathway that we laid on purpose. And then for anyone who's also interested in doing deals, period, we're gonna talk about, you know, the amount of communication necessary that we found will double the amount of deals that you could do. But first, just like Alvaro, when people reach out to me, and they do on the podcast show, they reach out at the website, there's a form that goes directly to my email. I check that, monitor it personally, and respond. People reach out, hey, how can I get started? And I just tell them, hey, look, download the book. Go to the website, www.reidiamonds.com. Put your email in there. You're going to get a PDF, 165-page, basically the roadmap and business plan that I put together in 2012 and 2013, which we came out to Chicago and then implemented in 2015, 2016, 17, and so on. But that's the best place to start if you have not been in the business and you like the sound of wholesaling and you're trying to figure out how to go about it. The people who read that book and then come back and say, yeah, I read the book, like what's next, or I'm in your market, or the person that reads that book and then calls you, Aaron, what kind of reception do they get in comparison to somebody who just wants to do the wholesale business?
Oh, that's a great question. Well, first of all, I am an open book. I say that all the time. I'm a glass house. So when people call me, I'll ask them a few things and I find out where they are in the business. And I'm the type of guy, man, I feel like God, I believe in God. And I also believe in, you know, other ideals like karma and stuff like that. So I don't know, when people give me, Dan, if I have 5 minutes to spare, 10 minutes to spare, I will ask them some questions. And I try to impart knowledge and wisdoms and plant seeds for people and everything, you know, whether I meet them in person or I even talk to them on the phone, even if it's just for a few minutes. And my family will tell you that. Real estate follows me everywhere I go. I was at church yesterday. Somebody mentioned to me about real estate. I sat there for 5 minutes and asked them a few questions and gave them some very pointed advice for direction. So when a person tells me they want to wholesale, they want to get an investment, I have an open book. You know, I'm an open door policy. I invite them to call me again. I tell them a little bit about what I'm doing and give them some inspiration. And I also give them some books to read. You know, I definitely told them about your book. I've read a lot. When I got started in this, man, I probably read about 8-9 different books about investments that stem from being a flipper to even being a wholesaler. I definitely recommend Become a Wholesale Real Estate Master by Dan Breslin, because it has all the stuff that everybody was talking about and then some. You go beyond the veil, you get into specific things, language patterns and conversations, you give out, you know, verbiage and language patterns and contracts, the whole nine. Not very few people, if anybody else, was doing all that. And you can read that book and actually understand wholesaling as well as being a fix and flipper, because the mentality and the approach is the same and with the way that you approach that book, and which is what I appreciated about it, because I never got into this game to wholesale. I came into this game to be an investor. I told him about The Art of Persuasion by Robert Cialdini, Straight Line Persuasion by Jordan Belfort, Maybe Never Split the Difference by Chris Voss, which is a new book that we've been really examining that I'm excited about. So that's what I do. I give them a few books. I give them a few pointers, a few pieces of information, some inspiration, some motivation. Most people are discouraged or they're afraid to pull the trigger. It's one of the two, right? So I'm going to identify that real quick. What is your pain? And I'm going to try to resolve it real quick. And then I'll give them some other pieces of wisdom that they can feed off of until I hear from them again. Did that answer your question?
Yeah, it was spot on. And that's exactly what I'd look for. For me, it's almost like, quite frankly, I'm sending out a test. If you check out that book and then you come back and you look for the next book, I'll send you the next book. And if you do that again, it's the same way we've trained up everybody on the team. The people who read the books that were suggested to them the fastest, there were people who picked those books up that you just mentioned there a minute ago, Aaron. When they heard a recommendation for those books, they picked those books up. They read them. They were read within a week. They came back and said, okay, what's next? Here's my takeaways. That, you know, lack of procrastination, that diligent, quick execution is the same. It's the same character trait that, you know, leads to success. And you're not born with this stuff. You definitely develop this stuff. So it's that was actually really good stuff that you shared right there. And if anyone was listening and is just getting started, that's something you'd want to circle back around, get those books, read those books, and figure out what's next. The other nugget that I would like you to share is, let's say we have a fix and flip investor. Let's say we even had a lender trying to place money with the right investor that they were identifying, or let's say that they are a wholesaler who's dealing with sellers on the purchase of a property. So this specifically what I'm going to want you to talk about is going to be like for chasing and capturing the deal. Cutting through the noise and making sure that there's, if anyone's going to get that deal, you get the deal. And that would be, how much follow-up is the right amount of follow-up? What type of follow-up do you have the team doing when we're looking for deals? And, you know, how much is too much follow-up where someone's probably going to hunt you down and shoot you for the amount of follow-up that you do? Could you describe some of the details of all that?
My friend, I don't know if I subscribe to an idea of there's such thing as too much follow-up. I just don't know it. I don't, you know, I guess there's one point it'll move to a different bucket. But to answer your question, we are very, very diligent. To put it in clear terms, 25% or more of our business, out of those 33 deals that you even mentioned at the beginning of our conversation, is from old business. It's from business that came in a while ago that we either continually put in phone calls, sent them text messages, sent them emails to reach them and finally connect with them to go out there to see the property or discuss with them what we could do for them over the phone. So to put this in idea, so let's say the lead comes in right away. Somebody's calling that lead within minutes, within an hour at the most. I think you and I both have like a 45-minute window where like we hit DEFCON 5 if we know somebody hasn't touched that person, just to make sure that, you know, cutting through the noise, 80% of that is getting to them first, right? Because, you know, if they called you, 9 out of 10, you're one of 5 to 7 investors that sent a letter to that person, and they've got all 5 or 7 letters there, and they're making calls, and they're going to call all through all 7 letters. Hopefully you were the first one. You might have been the 5th or 6th, but whoever answered the phone and connects with that person, more than 50% of the time is going to get the deal. That's my experience. And if you don't get to that person within 24 hours, a third of the time, you won't ever get them on the phone. But that's another conversation. So we're really adamant about getting that first connection. If we will call 2-3 times in a day at different times of the day. We will leave a voice message. We will send them text messages at the same time that we're leaving a voice message. I call that hitting them on all three fronts, phone call, text, and email, and voicemail. And that's how we do it. We're aggressive at it, not to come off desperate. If we, within the first 3-4 days, if we're not getting anything, that person probably wasn't serious about selling their home in the first place, we move on. But it doesn't go away. Now it goes into a follow-up process. That's part of my admin team. Now they'll continually get a text message once a week, an email once a week, a voicemail once a week, until they say, yay or nay, we're still interested in selling our property, or we've reconsidered your offer, whatever the category may be for why that person's in a follow-up status. So we're very aggressive about it. It never really goes away until it's dead, man. I mean, honestly, it just doesn't.
And I just wanted to kind of spend I wanted to spend a moment or two on that because that's something you have driven for. That's something we, you know, steadfastly, hard-headed, bull-nosed, pushing, you know, it's just a relentless amount of effort to instill in yourself and in other people that level of follow-up, to do that every time and consistently do that and get the results. And we have a deal that's closing this week. We are buying the deal. We're selling it for a $30,000 profit almost instantaneously within a week or two. And her original asking price was $200,000. They filled this out in Podio, our contact information database, $200,000 asking price. And we, I believe, had two separate strings of voicemail where there was 5 or 10 voicemail and left text notes in our record, in our Podio record there, meaning that people had contacted. Alvaro did this. Alvaro contacted 5 to 10 times the first time. Then there was a few conversations that took place. And then the seller went dark, and there was another 12 voicemails and text messages before she finally picked up and then agreed to sell us that property for $48,500. So not only did it look like she was unrealistic and unreasonable in her asking price for a property that needed a renovation, but in the end, she sold for the right price. And it was only after an insane amount of follow-up that was done on our behalf to get that deal. And so if it's you that, you know, if you're a real estate agent and you're trying to follow up, I mean, there's just so much activity going on in today's day and age with Facebook, Instagram, Snapchat, you know, the list goes on with social media things, emails coming through, faxes coming through, text messages coming through. I know a lot of people who don't even check their voicemails anymore or even have their voicemails set up. So for us, we have to take it upon ourselves to be responsible to try to touch them on multiple mediums at one time. And I'm sure there's people listening to this episode right now who are nodding their head because they received from me a voicemail when I called and they didn't answer, a text message immediately following the voicemail, and they've gotten emails from me within that same 24-hour period. And they're thinking, yeah, that's right. How about that? And that's just something that, I don't know, seems like not everybody – or maybe people are kind of almost looking for permission for that. I know that I was early on. I didn't want to bother people. I thought they would get back to me
right
before I realized just how busy people are, especially in the midst of the furious activity of deal flow and opportunity that we're in here in 2018, while we're in this strong real estate market, strong stock market, strong overall positive, optimistic economy. It's the onus is on you to cut through the noise and get that deal.
Yes, and you'll be surprised how many people are actually going after each and every one of these properties, man. There's so many investors right now, so many students trying their first hand at real estate. You know, it's I tell people, man, they're getting bludgeoned over the head by other people. So you've got to be persistent, you know. And making yourself stand out and getting their attention first. Absolutely.
And for anybody listening that might be new, if you're, you know, you heard the wholesale book suggestion, you're getting started, you're thinking like, wouldn't it be cool? I need some buyers. Like, we're happy as a team in Diamond Equity in whichever market that we operate to tell you up front. Like, you can contact us and let us know, you know, you listened to the podcast and you read the book and you just want to know, like, what would we pay for this property because you have a seller lead. Aaron, I'm sure you'd be happy to spend a few moments with somebody. Hey, we'll give you, you know, that's like a $60,000 property to us. If you can get it for 40, I don't care. You make 20. If you get it for 55, don't care. You'll make five, but we'll happily buy that property for, you know, 60,000 or whatever the price is, and really kind of make your deal seamless and easy if that's something that you would like to do.
Absolutely. If you have a deal like that, or even if you want to get some input about how I would approach it, I want to put my information out there. Feel free to give me a call. My direct phone number is 630-701-0930. Not hard to find. That phone number is with me at all times. And my email is Aaron, A-A-R-O-N, at diamondequityinvestments.com. If you reach me through phone or email, I'll definitely get back to you within 24 hours, if not sooner.
And if anybody wants to contact me directly, you can go right to www.reidiamonds.com. There is a form on the bottom right-hand side of the page, which I am hypersensitive to the subject line as that comes through my email, because I appreciate getting feedback through that channel there. My final question wrap up here, since we've already done many of our regular wrap ups on our previous interview, Aaron, but if you could go back to 2014, September, when the times were challenging, you just left the partner, you and I were just meeting for the first time in the Hyatt Hotel or wherever it was, what advice would you give yourself, knowing everything you know now a few years later and having seen what you've seen, 2020 hindsight, what would you tell yourself then to help maybe smooth or make things easier for you in that first year or two?
Wow. What would I say to myself? I would definitely say, number one, the first thing that comes to my heart is raise your expectations, man. Raise your expectations. You know, what you can accomplish, what this can mean to you and your family is much more than what you're thinking right now. Back then, I was just trying to survive and just trying to figure a way not to have to go back to a job. It was much deeper than that. It was much more impactful than that. So I would say back to myself, raise my expectations, which would have raised my vibration, my attitude, my level of commitment, everything, right? My belief. I mean, so much of what you think, feel, and believe transitions into what you do, which has a direct effect on your results. So if I can go back to how I was thinking back then and raise my awareness as far as how I'm really feeling, what I'm really going to accomplish, what I really can expect from this, I think I would have gotten much better results. And number two, I would have said, just no matter what, stay the course. Don't look for the exit sign. Don't look for the next, the next profit center, the next lane to jump into, the next investment. Get good at one thing, become a master, become an expert, become a commodity, and then expand. You know, that was so much of what I was doing in the past is I want to do rentals and I want to do wholesale and I want to do fix and flipping and I want to do lease options. Get good at one thing. Get great at it and then consider something else. Those are the two things I would say to myself. I would have saved myself a lot of time, energy, wasted money and time, you know, behind the scenes trying to learn all these other things. And I should have just mastered and focused on my negotiation and my sales skills, raised my expectations, and continue just to move forward and believe in what we were doing. We would have got there faster.
Great answer, Aaron. Great answer. Yeah, the shiny object syndrome. And I think that when I first got into the business, the same thing happened to me. Let alone thinking that because I had a little success in this business, maybe I could have success in another. And now I start to try, you know, I tried to start a few other marketing companies and things of that nature. Whereas when I finally dug down deep early on in 2012, 13, 14 and said, okay, we're going to just focus on wholesale. We're going to, you know, generate cash from basically nothing. At the time, I was digging myself out of the hole that happened for me from 2008, 9, 10, 11. It was kind of a rough couple years there. as the market was changing. That was instrumental. I mean, that made all the difference. For us here at our level now, focusing on wholesaling first allowed us to develop in each of these markets a deal flow that it's just unmatched by most of the fix and flip investors. So once we transitioned a few years back to start fixing and flipping deals, we had a continuous flow of those opportunities coming across the table. We've already mastered our ability to get really solid home run deals from the gate.
I would agree. You know, honestly, man, when I think back, it's really not even fair, man. It's like, I liken it to like when you have like a group of trained gladiators that go into the monks of like peasants or farmers or regular just trained soldiers, and they just, five of them just mop the field. I mean, what we had to do to cut our teeth with no credibility, no credit, no money, no image, very little wisdom to figure out how to wholesale deals. And then, you know, the entry point that we had to be at on the deal to create the spreads and the negotiation tactics and all that stuff to learn how to become professional. All those skills created such amount of freaking muscle that when we transitioned to becoming fix and flippers, man, it was almost unfair. It was almost unfair.
Yeah, man. Any
That's it.
Cool. Any other final thoughts or questions that I didn't have the sense to ask that you might want to answer before we wrap up here, Aaron?
No, I really appreciate all the questions. I hope I gave some good input. I definitely got some things out of even what you were saying. And more importantly, I really feel that we get a good opportunity for everybody to get a little bit more knowledge about what we're doing here in Chicago. It is exciting. We're just really honestly, I feel, taking the limits off and really poised for growth. And the infrastructure is here. The team is here. So we're definitely excited, and we know that there's bigger and better things to come. And a lot of that has to do with the team that we have, and more importantly, the goals and ideals that we stick to. And like you said, we're just relentless about it. Nobody's celebrating. Nobody's patting our back. You know, we're not trying to rest in the middle. So I think a lot of that has to do with that, and I'm glad to be a part of it, man. I don't consider myself at all doing this by myself. This is a team effort. Iron sharpens iron. And I'm definitely grateful just to be a part of it.
Thank God and thank you, Aaron. Appreciate you coming on the show today.
Thank you as well, sir. I appreciate you as well, deeply. I'm sure you know that.
No doubt. And thank you for listening to this episode of the REI Diamond Show. Are you interested in receiving an email notification of the next episode? You can either sign up at www.reidiamonds.com or subscribe through one of the podcasting apps, including iTunes, Google Play, and Stitcher. Do you have investment capital not already earning above average returns? If you are interested in checking out upcoming private mortgage opportunity investments that I have available in Chicago, Atlanta, Florida, and Philadelphia, go to www.superchargedreturns.com. You'll also receive instant access to the audio on how to create tax-free real estate investments, and you can check out profitable real estate deals at that site as well. And finally, if you have certain questions or topics you'd like discussed on a future episode, or if you have a guest suggestion, someone you'd like me to invite on the show, contact me by clicking on the Contact Dan link at www.reidiamonds.com. Thanks again for being a loyal listener of the show. Dan Breslin here. I'll catch you on the next one.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the REI Diamonds Show with Dan Breslin. To receive email notifications of new weekly episodes, sign up at www.reidiamonds.com.